I assume that I should use mic for the recording. Okay, so hello everybody. So, the session will last until 10 past 12 or 15 past 12. Let's see how we will go forward with it. How many of you had the opportunity to use Service Fabric until now? Okay. Half of the room. And how many of you knows a little bit about Service Fabric or microservices in general? Okay, good. So in this case, I will not focus on the common stuff, on the generic stuff. We will try to look on different things that make Service Fabric different, or the small thing that can make our life better, or even worse if we don't know exactly how we need to use each feature. So shortly, I would like to present myself. My name is Radovanu Vuleia, and like assume like many of you, I'm also an MVP. I'm on cloud MVP, and the most interesting thing is related to what I've done last year. So we started to develop a product for the Internet of Things, but the difference here is that we are connecting medical devices. Basically, we are connecting hospitals between them. And for us, usually a device is a half a million device that need all the time to communicate with our client. So we made a load test in October or November, I think at the end of October, to be more exactly. And during the load test, we had almost 2,000 CPU cores allocated. And usually, only our audit logs was around 10 or 15 gigabytes per hour. So this is only the audit logs, nothing more. And in the last few months, we started to look at the service fabric to see how we can use service fabric to replace part of our worker roles, web roles, to be able to scale more easily, and also to offer a better SLA. So why 30? It's pretty simple. Usually, I saw presentation with 5 steps that you need to do, or with 10 steps. I said, okay, let's say that we need to do 13 things or 13 steps that you need to do to be able to use a specific service. So, how does a classical architecture look like? Usually we can have a monolithic architecture. We have 2-3 layers, 4-5. It's not very important how many layers we have, but basically we have different layers that can communicate between each others. And in time, things started to evolve. Now it is very common to see different designs of application that have small components that can communicate between each other, different messaging system, like service bus, maybe a notification system or an event-based system like Event Hub and so on. But basically, what we are doing, we are splitting and we are trying to define smaller and smaller components that are doing only one thing, or at least smaller things, so it is more easily to work with them, to change, to update, and so on. But what is usually the problem with this kind of system, especially for the team that is developing this kind of solution, is that the team needs to know usually everything about the application, how each component interact with each other, and so on. So if we have a new colleague in our team, we could have 1 month, 3 months period of time of learning to understand the solution, how different components interact with each others, and so on. But if we would have very, very simple components that are doing only one thing, and the communication it would be a standard communication with a classical like a REST API for example, then we could have a new guy in our team, and after 2 or 3 days, he will be able to take a task and to add a real value to our product. Using a microservice architecture, we can do this. Why? Because usually when we are using a microservice architecture, we will have very, very small components that are independent and can be upgraded independently without affecting the other components. This is basically the most important characteristic of a microservice solution. And I would say that the most important thing is we should focus on doing a very small task. Because normally what we are trying to do, we are trying to put in a component or in an instance different things. So if for example we need the security, we will add there. If we need something more to look in the security logs to process it, maybe we would like to add there that kind of a functionality and so on. And even if we will host in a microservice solution like Service Fabric, we can, even if we host it in a microservice solution, if you don't think about what we are doing there, what kind of instances and what kind of services we are adding there, we can very easily end up with the same problem, with the same architecture that we had before. This is how usually a microservice solution looks like. So we have different services that communicate with each other. Very important to notify is that we can have services that have their own storage. Don't think that when we say that they can have their own storage means that they need to store all this content on the VM or on the instance where the service is running, but they are the only service that are access that specific storage because they are the service that needs to access that information and not all the time needs to be outside the system in a common place like SQL, or where all the services would know the connection string and would go and interrogate it. So, what is Service Fabric? Basically, it's a microservice solution that is coming from Microsoft. It is very well known now because it's running on Azure, but we'll see a little bit later that it is cross-platform in the way that it can run also on a premises and also on different operating system. So, from the capabilities perspective, I don't want to focus too much here. It's basically very scalable, available. The performance is very good. Also, the life cycle is very easily. We can update a service independently without having to affect all our system. And also here, an important thing to know is that we can push a new version of our service and in the same time to have the old version on some instances to have better SLA. So what does this mean? If, for example, we would need to update this service and we have, let's say, 5 instances of that service running. When we are doing the update, we can do it. We can do it in small steps, in increment step. What does this mean? We can update two or three instances with our new version, and after that also to update the rest of them. So basically, all the time our system will still run. This is a classical slide. What is important here to notify is that we don't have only Azure, we have also on-premises solution or even to be able to host it in a different cloud provider. For example, nothing stops us to deploy Service Fabric on AWS in the end because Azure Service Fabric is based on VMs. So in the end, you will pay only the VMs where your cluster is running. So you can take the same deployment, create a service fabric in a different cloud provider or on your own on-premise data center, and to deploy your solution, your software in the same way. Nothing is changing. And also we saw at the keynote that now Microsoft love Linux, love open source, and so on. And Service Fabric very soon will come also with support for Linux. So we don't need any more VMs hosted on Windows to be able to have service, We can have VMs that are running running Linux. Well, so let's see a little bit about what are the different service types that we can have. What I identify that we have two different axes, like in space. One is we can have reliable services and or reliable actors, and we can have stateless services or stateful. And we'll talk about each of them a little bit later. But basically, we can have four different types of services that we can run on Service Fabric. What are the reliable services? We can see them like a classical service, like a Windows service or a service that is running on a worker role. Basically, we have some code that is running, and as long as we are doing something, the service will run there. If something happens there, we will lose all the state that is hosted there. But in a reliable actor, the state is persisted. Persisted. What does this mean? We can have, for example, use an actor way to map the state of each user. If he's active or not, let's say that we are storing his phone number and so on in the actor itself. If the user will come after 2 weeks, we will still have the same instance with all the information that we store about that specific user in the actor information. Also, it is important to know that reliable actors are single thread. This means that if we are exposing tor-free methods from one actor, only one method will be called, will run in the same time, and the other one will stay in a queue. We'll see a little bit later exactly how these things are happening. Stateless and stateful services. Stateless is a service that don't have a state. So once our code ends, so our call to a method ends, we will lose all the information that we persisted in memory. In comparison with a stateful service, where all the information that we want to persist will persist automatically, and we'll see how these things are happening. So what we need to do if we want to define a reliable stateless service? Basically, we only need to extend stateless service, and let's assume that we have a long running task that we want to run there. We have the run async method, and in this method, in the while cycle, we can write our code. It's very similar to the worker role. So how many of you used until now Azure worker roles? Basically, it is the same thing. You put your code here, and the code will run pretty great. Also, we have a cancellation token, which means that the client, the caller that initiates this call, is able to cancel the request if it's needed. And also, we can see that we can basically start or control or communicate with an instance of a service based on a path, based on a naming convention. We don't have HTTP or HTTPS. We have Fabric. We need to specify the application name and the service name. Also, all communication with a service can be done on different protocols also. So very easily we can expose we can expose for a service a web endpoint and to communicate with the service using HTTP or HTTPS communication. Foreign actor, the things are changing a little bit, and why? We need first of all to define an interface to specify what is the functionality that is exposed by the actor, and after that to implement our interface and of course extend us a specific class that is for the actors. Why we need to define the interface? Because somebody else from an external source usually will want to call our functionality, and this is why we need to specify what are the methods, what is the functionality that we want to expose. Also here we can observe that we have the actor state. Basically everything that we store in an actor state will be persisted. So between different calls in a time, the state of the actor will be persisted. The state, it is important to be a class that can be serialized using data contract. This is the only thing that we need to do. And we can put there any kind of information that we want. Now, let's see a little bit the life cycle of our data and basically of our service. For all four of them, when we are doing the first call, everything we will find, we will have the instance of our service and we will execute our code. It is important to know that for the actors, we have the state, the one that needs to be serialized using data contract. For a reliable service that is stateful, we don't have a real state there, but we have reliable collection that we'll talk a little bit later, and we'll see that basically in the reliable collection we can store any kind of content that we want to access a little bit later. So in a way we have a state there, we can store information, but it's not so easily. What is happening after the first call? After the first call is executed. For a reliable service that is stateless, we will lose any kind of data that we store there. For a reliable service that is stateful, the thing that we stored in the reliable collection will be persisted. Everything else will be lost. And now, what will happen for both cases when we have a reliable actor? The state will be persisted. But here, a tricky question. What is the difference between stateless and stateful actor? It is in the moment when garbage collected is triggered. In the moment when garbage collected is triggered, the stateless actor will lose even the state. So the state will not be persisted. But for a reliable actor that is stateful, the state will be persisted after the garbage collector will run. This means that if the garbage collector, for example, is configured to run every one hour to make some cleaning there, if we have an actor that was not called in the last one hour and is stateless, he will lose the state. Even if we said, okay, we have the state, we have an actor, so the state should be persisted. So if we have a state that we want to persist for a long time, we should all the time use a reliable actor that is stateful. Good. Now, what are the reliable collection? Basically, can be used only by reliable services and allow us to store any kind of data there as long as we want. From a developer perspective, we don't need to care about where the data is stored, how it is synchronized between different VMs, inside the cluster and so on. This is offered out of the box. In this moment in time, we have only support for queue and for dictionary, but basically we can map any kind of collection there on top of a queue and on top of a dictionary. And very important to know is that both of them support transactions. So what does this mean? This means that when we do an operation over our collection, as long as it is a read operation, we do not care about it. But if it's a write, if it's a write operation, then we can use transaction, and we need to use transaction when we are doing different changes there. Now, the interesting thing about transactions is that we can use not only on only one collection, in our case a reliable dictionary, but in the transaction itself we can play with more than one instance of a collection. So basically what I've done here, I got my reliable dictionary from the state manager. The state manager basically give us the access to all the reliable collection that specific service has, and after that I edit or updated a specific content from there. Now, a very normal question up here: okay, where my data is stored from a reliable collection? So first of all, we will have our content in memory. So reliable collection can be found in memory, but under the hood, we have the state manager that will replicate the reliable collection, our instance of reliable collection, between different nodes of our cluster. And on top of this, we have also a local persistence. Basically, it's very similar. For example, how MongoDB is storing any kind of change that are happened there. So basically it's like a audit log with all the changes that are persisted on this. Now, for the persistence, we have a dedicated persistence and a shared one. Why do you think that we have two different ones? So basically the log persistence log called the shared, and after that the dedicated. This is happening only for storage devices that are spinned. So normal hard disk. If we have an SSD, then automatically the local persistent log will don't need to use a shared log, and will use directly the dedicated. Because when we are using a normal HDD, because of the spin we can have a latency there. And basically the shirt is playing the role, if you can say, of a buffer to be able to write all the information in the logs without having any kind of latency there. Good. Now, for me it was a disappointment that reliable collection, you cannot access the specific instance of a reliable collection from different services. So if we have two different type of services, let's say service A and service B, and service A create a reliable dictionary, a specific instance, you will not be able to access that instance of dictionary from other services. For example, service B can access only the reliable collection created by service B, and service A only the one that were created by service A. Now to make only a check with you, what is the difference between a stateless and a stateful service? Or what did you understand until now from that?
The difference is state.
Okay, a different state. Okay. So in the stateless, you usually don't have a state. In comparison with a stateful service where you have a state, but you can play a little bit around them with the state that an actor have, and also with the reliable collection. Now let's go a little bit forward and let's talk about timers and reminders. Timers and reminder can be used and exist only in combination with actors. So if you have a reliable service, you cannot use timers and reminders. Basically, a timer is very similar with a .NET classical timer. You specify a specific time interval when you want to execute your code or a specific task. Now, the biggest difference between a timer and a reminder is that reminder will be triggered even if your service is in a different state. So, for example, is starting, or when a failover is happening from one node to another, and so on. In comparison with a timer, that will be triggered only if the state of your actor is fine. You are on the green flag, and you should remember that also for timers and reminder, the concurrency part is applicable. What does this mean? That even if you have a call, even if you have a timer that is triggered on your actor, if you have another call from an external source that runs on that actor, the timer, the reminder action will need to wait until that call is executed. So for example, if we have call one, and during the call one we have also call B that is coming, call B will not be executed until when call one will finish as a execution. But what do you think that would happen if, for example, we have a call zero that is executing? We have call one and call two that are coming in the same time when call zero is executing, and after call two was requested, also the reminder is triggered. When do you think that the reminder will be will run? Theoretically, it should run after call one and call two, because basically he is in a waiting queue and waiting his order. But there is a small trick. Reminders and timers will be put in the queue with a different priority. So even if we have call one and call two that are waiting and came before the trigger for our reminder, the reminder will run before them. Good. Now let's talk about events and reentrancy. What are the events we can use when different things are happening on our actor and we want to notify external services or another service that a state change, or we are in a specific point in our flow? So using events, we can notify a client or any kind of external code that something happened there. It's very similar with the events that we know from C#, but they are applicable on service fabric and on actors and not on our code. The reentrancy part is happening in the moment when for example we have two or three different actors that make call from one to another. So let's assume that actor one makes a call to actor two. Actor two will make a call to actor three, and we have a logic that will trigger from actor three a call to actor one. So this is called reentrancy in the moment when we have a cipher, or a request that can look like a cipher. And based on configuration, we can specify if we are allowing this or not. Because there are moments in time when we might not want to allow something like this. Because if actor 3 would call actor 1 and we would be on the same flow, we can have here a cycle and to be blocked. So depends very much how we want to run our code and what is our logic that is behind them. So let's come back to the events and see how we can implement the events. We said that events are applicable only for actors. But before being able to use events, we need to define what is our event. In our case, we specify that we have an event called count updated. The client or the part of the code that needs to be notified will need to implement this interface and specify the logic that needs to be triggered, that needs to be run in the moment when the event is triggered. On the actor side, the only thing that we need to do is to trigger our event. Basically, we need to call the get event method and specify the interface that implement our event, and after that to trigger our event. But on the client side, what we also need to do, we need to register to our event. In our case, to specify the class that implement our event, basically to specify when that event is happening, you should run my code that is implemented in our case in my actor event handler. Now, if we would go a little bit forward from the code and see a little bit how the classes look like, we will talk about partitioning first. What does partitioning mean? It's very similar with the data partitioning and sharding that usually happens on SQL, for example. So we can partition our cluster, our node, and specify how many partitions we want to have. It is important to know here that the number of partitions doesn't need to be equal to the number of nodes. So in this example, we have 5 different nodes, but we have on each node 2 partitions. This means that basically we have 10 partitions in our cluster that is formed from 5 nodes. Each node, basically, it is a virtual machine, a VM for us. And in each partition, we can specify what service we want to run, or in how many partitions a service should run. But service fabric needs to be ready if something goes bad. So, for example, if a node goes down, because of an error or a hardware failure. This is why we also have replication. What does replication mean? Each partition we can specify to be replicated in a specific number of different nodes. So in this example, we can see that we have the replication set to 2. This means that we have a primary partition that is active, and also we have 2 secondary replicas that are ready to take the load if something bad happens there. Usually we have a master node. It's not really a master node, but it's the node that usually is managing all the states of the nodes and of the partition, and can detect automatically if the current state of a partition of a node from the whole perspective it's not 100% okay. And this node usually decide if a partition needs to go down or a node will be put on red, and all the logic that is running on that node should go on a different node. On top of this, we have the failover and the failover manager and the upgrade domains. What are the failover manager? Basically, even if we have everything virtualized, in the end we are running on hardware. And if you have for example 5 different servers from a hardware perspective, it will be great. But usually all these nodes are part of a data center that have common racks. So maybe and it's pretty common for example to have two nodes that are sharing in one way or another some hardware. This means the same storage rack or the same CPU rack and so on. So basically we want to configure that. And when we are using the Azure Service Fabric, this is basically done out of the box. If you want to manage them on premise, we will need to specify and to define our own failover cluster. This means what nodes are part of the same fault domain. On top of the fault domain, we have also the upgrade domains. When we are doing an update or a service fabric update, we want to specify what kind of nodes are part of the same upgrade domain. In my case, with the blue color, I mark one update domain, with the green another one, and only one node in the third. Usually, the combination between failover domains and upgrade domains is not one-to-one, and you want to mix between them. If something happens, to be able to control it. So, we talk about partitioning, we talk about replication, fault domain, upgrade domain, and so on. Let's see where is the location where each component is staying. So at the application level, we have the partitioning and the replication, and we can specify for each application how many partition we need and how many replicas for this partition we will need. At the cluster level, we need to specify, and we will be able to control the fault domain, the upgrade domain, the naming service, the resource balancer, and the failover manager. What is the naming service? If you remember the first examples, I said that we can make a request to a specific service based on a string, based on kind of URL, but not HTTP or HTTPS, but has the fabric at the beginning. Basically, this is the naming service. Service is the instance that is able to resolve all these requests and can make a mapping between our instances of our service and the endpoint that make the request. This is the current dashboard of service fabric. It is important to know that it is not only a web dashboard. But also looks the same if you have an on-premise cluster of Service Fabric, or you are using Azure Service Fabric. So basically, you can have all the information for monitoring to know what is the current state of our cluster, and also we can see, for example, in this case, let me make a zoom. So in our case, we can see that I deployed the demo SV application where I have three different type of services. I have an actor service that has three replication, that basically has a primary one and two different replicas, but only one is active, the primary one that is working as expected. Also, I have a stateful and the stateless stateful service, and each of them are running on only one node. Service affinity, and after that I will want to close the session. What is service affinity basically? Usually we will not start to write an application from scratch for service fabric. I expect that there will be a lot of opportunities for us, let's say in this way, when we need to port an existing application to a microservice architecture to service Fabric. In this kind of scenarios, we will have the code written in a way that we already know exactly how the calls will go from each server to which server the call is going and so on. And there we will need different ways how we can optimize the code and to be able to control it. So basically service affinity allow us to specify that on the same node from our service fabric cluster, we want to have a specific combination of services. So let's assume that we normally know that we need the service A and service B to run on the same node because they make a lot of interaction between them. In this case, using service affinity, we can specify that there is a dependency between these two services. And Service Fabric will assure us that these two services will run on the same node from our cluster. Of course, when we are using Service Affinity, we will have some limitation. For example, both services will need to have the same partition count, replication count, and so on. And also, I have a star here. Why this is very important? The way how we can specify the affinity between different services, so we cannot define a graph. So you cannot have service A and to have service B and C that have a dependency to service A. You can have only service A that is dependent to service B. Sorry, service B that is dependent to service A. You have service C, and if you have a dependency between them, you will need to specify that has a dependency to service B. And you will have, in a way or another, like a star. So, what we can run on Service Fabric? Basically, we can run any kind of application, not only backend applications that are executing code. We can have even, for example, web application. So we can host our website or our web app in service fabric and use for example Owen to host it directly there. On top of this, there is a pretty nice example on MSDN how you can host a MongoDB database in Service Fabric. And why? Basically a service doesn't need to have code. You can run from a service any kind of executable. You can have a script, you can have a MongoDB.exe in the end, and you can run an application there. And what Service Fabric will give you will manage automatically all the replicas that you need. So if something goes down, you can know that the secondary will become active and so on. So questions. I will take one or two questions. If not, I will be available during the lunch. Okay. So thank you. So thank you very much. I hope that you will enjoy today and also the dinner because it seems that we will have a lot of time. And if you have time during the weekend or maybe tonight or tomorrow afternoon, please visit the GitHub samples for service fabric. They're very good samples that can be very useful if you want to see what you can do with Service Fabric and what are the most powerful features. Thank you.